Welcome to Night Sky Tourist, a place to learn the night sky, have fun with its ancient stories, meet astronomers and dark sky advocates, and fall in love with the dark. I'm Vicki Dirksen, your host and author of the website and blog, nightskytourist.com. If you've never visited the website, I invite you to stop by after the podcast. Check out some of the great blog articles, browse through the resource page, and sign up for the monthly newsletters. The newsletters have great content that is exclusive for subscribers. Tonight's podcast is going to be a bit different from our previous episodes. I'm going to take you behind the scenes of Night Sky Tourist. I'm going to share a bit of my background and what led up to the creation of the website and the podcast. And I might even share a tiny sneak peek about the future of Night Sky Tourist. Are you ready? Let's get to it. Over the course of the last 14 episodes, we've really had a chance to meet a variety of people from all around the world. You've met Ted Blank, who is our first guest. He's the NASA Solar System Ambassador who's been with us on every episode answering questions from you. And then we had a children's book author, Marcia Diane Arnold, and she shared with us about a book that she wrote for children called Lights Out. We had Julie Wilder, and we talked about cosmic calendars and how she has taken a scientific look at the night sky and turned it into an amazing piece of art. We've learned about light pollution, cultural astronomy. We've learned about Mayan archaeoastronomy. And we've even got to visit places like Flagstaff, Arizona, Switzerland, England, and we even went to Malaysia in our last episode. But tonight we're going to do something a little different. I really want to share with you a little bit of my own story and kind of give you a glimpse of why Night Sky Tourist even exists. I grew up in the northern panhandle of Idaho, and I grew up under pretty dark skies. I lived in Lewiston, Idaho, which is down in a little valley. And the biggest source of light pollution was the lumber and paper mill that was in our community. So that really only impacted us in a big way if the clouds came and settled into the valley at night, and then the lights from that mill would just light up those clouds. They'd be like bright orange, and you just couldn't see anything beyond that. But on clear nights, we really had a great view of the night sky. And I can clearly remember when I first learned how to find the Big Dipper. I thought it was the most amazing thing to be able to go out into the night sky and be able to recognize a pattern in the stars. And I would always be telling my parents, look, look, there's the Big Dipper. And I could see it all year round. So I really loved doing that. I also have a very clear memory of being in bed one night. I was probably between 8 and 10 years old. And my parents came and got me out of bed, and they're like, you have to come outside. You've got to see this. And I was wondering what in the world was so important to my parents that they would wake me up after I'd already gone to bed at night. And so I went outside and I looked up at the sky and I was stunned. I was looking at the northern lights. I had never seen them before. And they were green and they were up there swirling around and flickering in the sky. They didn't make a single noise. And it felt kind of eerie to watch that. But it was the coolest thing ever. And it really stuck in my mind because I was just amazed at what the night sky could look like. My family also had a cabin in western Montana, and it was very, very dark there. And in this little tiny cabin, I would go to sleep at night watching the moon rise on the other side of the lake and watch the reflection on the water just change until I would fall asleep. But then when I would wake up in the morning, there's the sun rising in the exact same spot. And one of my favorite memories of being at the cabin would be in those early mornings when the light from the sun would reflect off of the lake water, and it would make all these dancing, glittering specks of light all over the ceiling in our cabin, almost like when a light hits a crystal. I had another really profound moment under the night sky when I was 18 years old. I had gone to Albania, and I spent 2 months of my summer there. And Albania had been under communist rule for 40 years before I got there. And they had elected their first democratic government in March of 1992. I arrived 3 months after that. And so the whole country was facing economic collapse and a lot of social unrest. And I traveled with a group that did medical and dental clinics across the country. And we even worked with the government in Albania to sort through a lot of donations of household and clothing goods that had been sent from humanitarian groups. We had gone to the north end of the country where we were doing some of these clinics. And we asked our host, who was Albanian, if we could spend the night on a hillside. And he was really uncomfortable with the idea. He was like, no, 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 there's gypsies. It's not safe. And we were like, it's okay. There's 30 of us. We'll be okay. And he says, no, they're going to steal all your things. Well, we had left most of our stuff back in the capital city in Tirana. So we really only had our sleeping bags and maybe a change of clothes and our toothbrushes. So we really didn't care. So he was reluctant, but he let us do it. And he stayed there with us so he could protect us. And I remember rolling out my sleeping bag and crawling into it and looking up at the sky and being blown away. I had never in my life seen so many stars at a single time. And then I saw a shooting star. And then I saw another shooting star. And another. And it turns out that there was a meteor shower that night. So not only was I under the most pristine, amazing dark sky I'd ever seen in my life, but I was also spending the night under during a meteor shower. And it was so amazing. I'd never seen the Milky Way like that except for in photos. And so that memory, that experience really stuck with me. And only a few years later, I ended up moving to Phoenix, Arizona. And it was the first time that I really had an experience with light pollution. I didn't know that's what it was called. I never had heard the term light pollution before, but it was the first time that I had the experience of it. And I can remember looking up into the sky and thinking, well, I can see the Big Dipper, but I don't really know what else I can see up there. There's hardly anything there. Although I will say that that was when Comet Hale-Bopp was around. So we did get to see that with a naked eye, which was pretty cool. But then we ended up moving out to a smaller suburb of Phoenix when I was 23. And that is the town that I still live in today. It's called Fountain Hills. And the skies are a lot darker here. There's a little mountain range that kind of divides where we live from the rest of the Phoenix metro area. And that kind of gives us a little barrier. And on the other side of us, there's a reservation and then just desert wilderness past that. And so, you know, we decided we were going to start our family here. We raised our kids here. And when my kids got into high school, I decided, you know what? I want my kids to know how to find their way around the night sky. Even though I grew up under a really great dark night sky and I could see the Milky Way and I saw the Northern Lights and all these things, I didn't know how to find any other constellations. I'd heard of Orion, but I'd never seen it. I didn't know what it looked like. I didn't know how to find these things. And I didn't want it to be that way for my kids. And so when they got to high school, I spent time homeschooling them and I decided to teach them naked eye astronomy. And I ended up offering that class to the local homeschool group, and I had 20 students join that class that year. And I even had some parents who decided, I don't know this stuff and I want to learn it with my kids. So they would sit in at the back of the class so that they could learn the night sky as well. And so during that class, we watched a documentary by Ian Cheney, and it's called The City Dark, one that I highly recommend. And when I finished watching that documentary, I thought, wouldn't it be so cool if we could get our town designated as an international dark sky community, be able to preserve the night sky that we have here right out on the edge of a major metro area? And turns out there was already a group in my town who was working towards this, and they were in the middle of trying to update the lighting code in our community. And I found out about this the night before the town council was going to vote on this new lighting code. So I thought, oh, here's my chance. I'm going to get involved. So I emailed the mayor and I emailed each of the council members and I encouraged them, please vote for this updated lighting code. It would be great if we could move towards becoming a dark sky community. Well, at 10 o'clock the night before that vote, I got an email from the mayor. And she says, you know, you just finished going through the Leadership Academy in our town, and you know how much of a struggle it is for our community economically. And so it doesn't make sense for us to expect our business owners to turn off all the lights at 8 p.m. And I thought, I don't think you understand what this is all about. And so I emailed her back late that night, and I was very respectful, and I told her, well, actually, that's not what this is about. Nobody wants businesses or anything else to be turning lights out at 8 o'clock. This is really about using smart lighting that doesn't shine up into the sky, that's not really bright or super white blue, because it inhibits our view of the night sky and a lot of other things. And so the next day was when the town council met, and I didn't know what's going to happen. You know, what's the vote going to be? And I was so excited when I found out that it was a unanimous vote to update that lighting code. And so I felt really good. I finally got to be part of something like that in my community, a way of protecting the night sky. And so, of course, this group that already existed, it was called the Fountain Hills Dark Sky Association. The president, Joe Bill, tracked me down and he invited me to join the board. And my husband also joined because he, as an electrician, is a dark sky lighting specialist. And so we joined that board in January of 2017. And then 1 year later, in January of 2018, our town, Fountain Hills, Arizona, was certified as the world's 17th international dark sky community. So I have the privilege of living in a certified dark sky community. We went on and did a couple of really big live festivals, dark sky festivals here in our community. And then the natural next thing to do was to bring in an observatory. And so we formed the International Dark Sky Discovery Center Board. And I joined that board in May of 2019. And we're working to raise only $18 million. And we're going to bring in a research-grade public observatory and telescope. We're going to have an amazing planetarium where the dome is tilted so that it's easier to enjoy. We're going to have an immersion zone that's kind of like a big exhibit hall. And then a theater. And we're building a really good relationship with our community garden because light pollution has a really big impact on our nighttime pollinators. And so we're looking at doing some future projects with that organization. I am an official star dude in my community. We have a resort here in town called Adaro Scottsdale, and they were recently named in Travel and Leisure Magazine's Best Hotels in the World this year. And they were also noted in Condé Nast recently. And Adaro Scottsdale really promotes themselves as a dark sky resort. And their motto is where the desert meets the sky. And so they bring us star dudes, there's four of us, they bring us star dudes in about once a month, and we bring our telescopes, and the guests get to come out and they look through our telescopes, and we take our laser pointers and give them a tour of the night sky. So all of these things that I've just shared with you, from my childhood to my experience in Albania, and then teaching naked eye astronomy and really learning it myself and getting involved in the community for dark sky preservation, all of these things led me to this place where I decided, you know, this is really a cool message and it's something that I really want to do more of, get more involved in. And that's when I decided to start the Night Sky Tourist website. And that website launched in November of 2019. And I worked on that with the blog, and that blog continues on to today with some really great articles, a monthly newsletter for subscribers that has a lot of really cool stuff and even a list of what to see in the night sky this month. And then when I reached my first anniversary of Night Sky Tourist, I was thinking, what could I do that would be really cool to celebrate this first anniversary? And the idea popped in my head, oh, I could start a podcast. Well, I don't know why I thought that, because I have no experience whatsoever, no tech skills whatsoever for audio or producing an audio show or anything like that. But I just decided I'm going to do it. And I did. And it's been a really amazing experience so far. That launched in November 2020 to mark the first anniversary. And a lot of what I focus on with Night Sky Tourist is naked eye stargazing. I want it to be something that's so simple that people can just walk out in their backyard and not even really require any equipment. If you don't have a telescope or binoculars, I want to help you go out and experience the night sky, to know what you're looking at, to understand the phase of the moon or what planet that is over there. And I'm also really into cultural astronomy. I love the ancient stories that different cultures came up with around the world about these different constellations in the sky. And to me, that's a lot of our night sky heritage. And I don't want to lose that. And there's also a lot of places that have been built, like Chaco Canyon in New Mexico, or Stonehenge over in England, and different places like that, where they were built with astronomical alignments. And we just don't really do that with our buildings today. But that was such a big thing for them, sky watching and everything. And so that's a big part of what I do with Night Sky Tourist, is introducing people to our night sky heritage. And I love to travel. So astrotourism is a really big thing for me as well. I love to tell people of great places they can visit. For example, not far from where I live, there's a place called V-Bar V Ranch. And most people, even in Arizona, don't even know it exists. But it has this super amazing petroglyph calendar that was created almost 1,000 years ago by the ancient Pueblo people who lived here. And so I love to introduce people to places that they can travel to like that. And of course, I want to talk about dark sky preservation. What can we do? What are easy things that anybody can do? And coming back to some of those things that I shared with you about my childhood, connecting with nature and understanding our place in the universe through the night sky is so important to me. It's something that I think about a lot. I love to get out and hike and kayak and camp and just really enjoy my backyard and grow native plants in my landscape here at my house. And so that connection with nature is so important, and something that I really want to encourage other people to do. You know, 80% of the people in America, and even all around the world, 80% can no longer see the Milky Way. Some people have never seen it. And yet we have all of these amazing structures that were built with these alignments with the sky. Sky watching was critical for human life on Earth forever. They tracked the sky to understand the seasons so that they would know when to plant, when to harvest. For those who were nomads, they knew when to migrate. They based their rituals and their ceremonies and their festivals based on following the night sky. They used the sky for navigation. They would cross the oceans and vast deserts and not get lost. They would use storytelling to tell about their origin stories or why things were the way they were in the world. They would tell moral stories to their children using the stars, and they would tell the stories about their gods, their mythologies. And sadly, light pollution threatens our connection to all of these things. And the same goes for our busy lives. Our busy lives also threaten our connection to these things. You know, one of the things I like to ask people is, do you know how to find the North Star? And most people will tell me, oh, it's the brightest star in the sky. And sometimes the brightest star in the sky would be Jupiter, and they would be lost at sea if they had to rely on their navigation skills. You know, other things I ask people, what season would you see Orion? Or what season would it be when you see Scorpius? What would be lost if light pollution prevented us from understanding places like Chaco Canyon in New Mexico? You know, our clocks and our calendars really remove us from understanding how even our own human bodies are connected to the rhythms of our planet. You know, you have day and night. And our bodies follow this pattern of the day and night with being awake and going to sleep. And our long-term health really relies on staying in sync with that rhythm. There's the monthly rhythms with the lunar cycle. And you know, a full moon and a new moon both create much higher tides than the other times of the month. And of course, there's the seasonality of life on Earth and our connection to that. You know, in the winter, there's hardly any light when you get into the northern regions. And in the summer, it's always light. And so we have this huge connection biologically with the rhythms of the earth. And yet we live these busy lives where we try to live the same way month after month, week after week, and we lose track of what's happening in the world around us, what's happening in the night sky, what's happening in nature, and where we fit into all of that. So one of the things that I started doing when the pandemic hit and life slowed down a little bit and I didn't have to be so busy away from home, and I started making more of a priority about having great night sky experiences. And of course, almost all of that was happening in my own backyard. But I would go into the backyard at dusk and just sit down and I'd watch the bats and the nighthawks come out and just, you know, flitter around my backyard trying to catch their dinner. And then I'd watch the stars come out one at a time and watch the constellations start to take shape. I'd look for the planets that I knew were out there. Sometimes I'd pull my telescope out, especially when Jupiter and Saturn were still in the sky. I spent a lot of time looking at them. It was super cool that we got to see Comet Neowise during this time. And my favorite evenings are when Venus is in the western sky right after the sun goes down. And there's that little teeny tiny sliver of the moon. That's my very favorite night. And you know, this last year I learned about the ancient star stories of the Pleiades with Grandmother Spider and the Star Woman. And I absolutely fell in love with Pleiades. And I have to admit, it's probably my favorite constellation now. And I'm learning about my own natural and seasonal sleeping patterns because I've started to place a priority on really connecting with nature in new ways. And so all of these things I try to bring into Night Sky Tourist. And it makes me want to do more to help others discover the wonder of getting to know the night sky, to know what they are seeing up there, and to be able to identify constellations and planets. I really want to do more to introduce people to really cool places that they can visit for a really great night sky experience, whether that's going to a really dark location where you can see the Milky Way, or it's traveling to places like I just mentioned, V-Bar V Ranch, or Chaco Canyon, or other places like this, where you get to have a glimpse of the ancient cultural heritage of stargazing. And I want to continue to do things to help others protect the night skies for ourselves, also for future generations. And so to give you just a little teeny tiny glimpse into what I have rolling around in my head for a night sky tourist here in the future, one, I'm working on a book project. And I'm not going to divulge any information on it quite yet, but that is in the works. There is going to be a book that's going to come along. And I'm also working on a very unique night sky tourist tour. And hopefully that will be able to roll out sometime next year in 2022. And as those little moving parts start coming together, I'm going to start sharing more about that here on the podcast. So as I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, this is a very different kind of episode. And so we'll resume our question and answer segment and our usual star tour in the next episode. And I want to thank you for joining me for this little look back at the origins of what led up to Night Sky Tourist and some of my thinking and what I do here and my thoughts about the future with all of this. And I hope that you share the podcast with your friends, your family. I hope that you subscribe to it. I hope that when the star tour part comes on, that you really do get your family together or get some friends together and go outside and actually look at the sky during the tour and find the things that we're talking about, because that is what that whole segment is all about. If you have any thoughts or ideas, comments about Night Sky Tourist, I really would love to hear from you, whether it's about the website, the blog, the resource page, the newsletter, or this podcast. I would love to hear from you. And you can email me at nightskytourist@gmail.com. And I would be happy to have a conversation with you about those thoughts or ideas that you have. I've mentioned a couple of resources already, and you can find links to those in our show notes. And you can find that at nightskytourist.com/15. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Night Sky Tourist podcast. If you enjoy the Night Sky Tourist podcast, please show your support by subscribing to it in your podcatcher and leave a written review. Your reviews are really important to me and they help others discover the podcast. Be sure to visit nightskytourist.com for great articles and resources. And while you're there, sign up for the monthly newsletter for exclusive content. Click on the podcast tab to find instructions for submitting your question for a future episode. You can check out our show notes for links of the resources mentioned in this episode at nightskytourist.com/15. We'll see you here again in 2 weeks. In the meantime, keep looking up.